Cool. So this will be on the screen as you guys can see. I'm going to start reading now. Cool. Hope everyone's got it. Luke chapter 12, starting from verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundance harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build even bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?' This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." Reverend Ying will now preach from this word.
Okay, I've got control. All right. Okay, let's have a look. I'm trying to control things from my computer. Oh, great. I got a slide error. Okay, let's have a look. Hi, everyone. As I said, I'm preaching from Milsons Point, and guess what? Being at Milsons Point, I have to relearn a lot of new skills, one of which is trying to make sure my technology's up and running. So I've just got to make sure it is going. Is it going? Okay. I need to use my slides. Okay. Bear with me for a second. All right. What a dog. It has to always has to be. Sorry. All right, let's try this. Here we go. Okay. We're going to, it was working perfectly this morning. So guys, this is the problem. You get used to a certain thing at home, and then suddenly, guess what? When you try something new, it just happens, and it's going to be part of the story. Okay, let's give it a shot. Anyway. All right. Your money or your life is the big theme for today. And when you think about it, right, that is really the sorts of, it's a sort of a phrase which we don't think much about because, we never have to think about whether it's my money or my life. The truth of the matter is, for most of us, our money is the key to our life. The money brings with it things that we can enjoy. And so we often don't think it's your money or your life. But today, the passage will challenge us to ask this question, your money or your life? And there are 4 points that I want to actually highlight for us today. 4 points in the next slide. 4 points, right? These are the 4 points that I'm going to be looking at. So let's just go with the next point, all right? The next point. First one is doing the right thing can often be driven from wrong motives. Doing the right thing can often be driven from wrong motives. And I want you to have a look at the passage in verses 13 to 14. Have a look at the passage there. When you look at the passage before you, right, you see this typical story of a father who's died, and the brother has now, one of the brothers has taken all the loot and just shot off, right? And he shot up with all the thing. The other brother says, "That's not so fair. Where's my part of the inheritance?" And go into a massive squabble. Now, when you think about it, this sort of thing happens all the time. There's always a fight about money, always a fight about inheritance, always a fight about assets. And I'm pretty sure that you have come across cases of friends where they are squabbling about the inheritance, about assets, or just plain squabbling about money. And to be honest, when you think about it, I'm pretty sure that if you were in a similar situation, you'd probably do a similar thing. You'd be pretty cheesed off with your sibling if they took all the inheritance and you were left holding the bag, so to speak. But when you think about it, what this guy is actually asking is not necessarily wrong. All he's asking is for his fair share of things. If we have the same parents, So it's right that we share the assets. We have the same parents who loved us both. It's right that we share the inheritance. So it's wrong that you've taken all the money and just skedaddle off. So what does he do? He turns to Jesus. He turns to Jesus and asks Jesus to set the score for him. Just get it right. So what does Jesus say? Well, you have a look at that next thing. Have a look at verse 14. What does Jesus say here? Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? What is Jesus actually saying here? He's basically saying here that he did not come to be your financial manager. He did not come to sort out your bank balance. He came to deal with your a problem, which is far, far deeper and bigger than imagined. He's basically saying to this guy, look, man, your problem is not your money. Your problem is not even your brother. The problem is far, far deeper and much, much bigger. What is the problem? Well, as I'm often said before, the problem is not the money or the heart or the problem. The problem is the heart. Because look at how Jesus responds in verse 15. What does he say there? Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. In other words, you think your problem is your money, the assets? No, the problem is your heart. What is your heart of the problem? It's your greed. It's your greed. This is his fundamental problem. It's his greed. See, what he wanted was not necessarily wrong. He wanted justice, basically. But his motives were far completely out of alignment because it was driven by greed more than anything else. It was greed that drove what he did. And so the first point that I want to say here is doing the right thing can often be driven by wrong motives. Doing the right thing can often be driven by wrong motives. Which leads me then to my second point. And what is that? And my second point is that greed is often more subtle than we realize it. Greed is often more subtle than we realize it. Have a look what the guy says. Look at what Jesus says, goes on to say. He says in verse 14, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. But notice that little phrase, which is often overlooked, all kinds of greed. In other words, there is the obvious greed, the sort of greed we all know about, the greed that is so plain to see, the greed that we can smell from a mile away. We see that greed in the Boxing Day sale as they wait there and scramble in, pushing and shoving just to get out of the sales. We see the greed which is so depicted in that famous iconic personality, Gordon Gekko. Greed is good in Wall Street. That's the sort of greed we can see, that we smell, that we know about. That's the greed that we shun and we despise. But the problem is that greed can often be so, so subtle. Because what does Jesus say? He says to watch against all kinds of greed. All kinds of greed. Not just the obvious ones. Not the ones that we can see so clearly. But the greed which is often more subtle. More respectable. More normal. But still greed. Jesus warns us against not just the obvious greed, but all kinds of greed. Well, that begs the question, isn't it? What is greed? Well, Paul actually defines greed for us in this way. In Ephesians chapter 5, verses 3 to 4, this is what Paul says in greed, about greed. But notice what he says in verse 5. In verse 5, he says these words. How does he define greed? A greedy person is a person who is an idolater. That is what a greedy person is. A greedy person is an idolater. If you are a greedy, you're an idolater. If you there's something that you worship, that is greed. If you remember a few weeks ago, I define greed this way. Idolatry is when something you enjoy becomes something you worship. Idolatry is when something you enjoy becomes something you worship. There are a lot of things that we enjoy, good things that we enjoy, but when they become something worship, they become an idol. Or idolatry, in other words, idolatry is turning God's good gifts into gods themselves. Idolatry is turning God's good gifts into gods themselves. Think of some of the good things that God has given us, and they have become modern idols of greed. They themselves are not necessarily wrong, are they? But when they have become God things, they have become idols. And what is idolatry? Nothing more than greed. I mean, you think about it, right? You think about it. There are things that we love. We want safety. Safety is a good thing. Safety is a very good thing. We play safe. We make sure we take safe routes home. But when does safety become an idol? When does it become greedy for safety? If that's in the case when we feel that we're more concerned about safety than the safety of others. We don't really care about that. They can be in danger, but we hear the old saying, save yourself, save yourself. That's often the phrase we hear, save yourself, because what's most important, if you remember a few weeks ago, was self-preservation is the first law of human nature. Or think about looks. It's not a bad thing to want to look good, to dress nicely. That's a good thing. But when does it become an idol? When does it become a subtle form of greed? When we become obsessed with looks. When we begin to define ourselves with looks. When do we begin to judge others by how they look or don't look? When we begin obsessed, when we begin to spend expensive clothes, so much so that you cannot think of anything else but your looks. And when your looks are taken away from you, you feel like it's the end of the world. They're not bad things, but they can become a subtle form of greed, greedy for good looks. Or what about just comfort? Well, having comfortable lifestyle is not a bad thing. I like wining and dining in nice restaurants. I like to live in a nice house. I like to wear nice clothes and drink, eat in nice food and so on like that. But when does it become expression of greed? It becomes an expression of greed when that becomes more important than serving others. When we are not prepared to sacrifice our lifestyle for the sake of others. When we are prepared to support our lifestyle, even it does cost others. And so we have this thing in the world where we have most of the resources taken up by the few rich people just to sustain their lifestyle. Or love. Love is a good thing. We were made for love. But how does love become an expression of greed? How does love become an idol? And it becomes an idol expression of greed when we forever looking for love, and if we do not find it in someone, what do? We ditch them because you're not loving me. We ditch them because they're not the person who's going to give me all the attention they need. And we will move from one person, another person, another person, because we have become greedy for love. Love is a good thing. But when it becomes an idol, it becomes a form of expression of our greed. You see, there is the obvious greed that we can see. But more often, for most of us, greed shows itself in much more subtle ways, in more normal ways, indeed, seemingly irrespective ways, but still, nevertheless, greed. And so that's why I come to the second point there. Greed is often more subtle than we realize. That comes to mind, that leads me to a third point, that greed and consumerism cannot save us. You see, what is the clearest expression of greed? Well, the clearest expression of greed is in the consumer. Buy more stuff is the motto of our consumeristic society, isn't it? But listen to Jesus' words in verses 13 to 15 again. Because what does Jesus say there? Look at verse 15. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. You know, people often say the Bible is outdated, irrelevant, and cannot speak to our modern world. Well, this passage puts that idea to rest, because what Jesus here is speaking against is this modern concept of consumerism. And Jesus says that life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. But what does our modern consumeristic motto say? It says that life does consist in the abundance of your possession. What he says is so insightful, so insightful and so obvious. And when you think about it, it speaks into our hearts, this modern day concept of consumer. Why? Because we are forever pining after the wealth of others, after the success, after their looks, after their skill, after their fame, after their popularity. Now, we might say, no, I'm not materialistic. I am nothing like that. Well, stop and think about it. What is it that we like to think? You know, what we often say is often different to how we act. What are the things that often make you anxious? What are the things that make you anxious? What are the things that makes you angry? What are the things that you constantly argue about? Because the things that you get anxious about, the things that you're angry about, the things that you argue about, you know what that says? That reveals your heart. Dare I say, it reveals your idol. Dare I say, it reveals how greedy you are or the things that you're greedy in. It could be work. Anxiously, constantly anxious about work or fighting about work or angry about work. It could be relationships. It could be money. It could be acknowledgement that they won't acknowledge. It could be the fact that they don't love me. I remember when I was a young kid at high school, I got converted year 8, and I started talking to all my friends about Jesus. When I came to year 10, I was challenged, go and talk to your friends about Jesus. I was challenged. And I started talking to all my friends about Jesus in the classrooms and the playgrounds and so on and so forth. Every person I could find, I had an opportunity to share about Jesus. It was all about Jesus, I kept saying, all about Jesus. I kept preaching the gospel to all my friends for the next 2 years, up to year 12. It's all about Jesus, not about success. It's not about this, it's all about Jesus. Then HSC. You know, I was doing quite well at school, hitting near the top at school. HSC came, and for some weird reason, things just went south. I studied my guts out, but when the exams came, for somehow I get mental blanks. I kept misreading questions. And you know what happened? I plunged into despair, anxiety, depression. I was almost in tears for the next 2 months, worried about whether I had failed the HSC. Now, what does that tell you? It tells me that I said it's all about Jesus, but my heart told me a different story. My word said it's all about Jesus. My heart says you're greedy. You're greedy for success. You're greedy for popularity. You're greedy to make a name for yourself. The word said one thing, but the heart revealed something different. You see, I had the right work, but the motives were driven by something different. You see, the underlying subtitle here behind this is our success is our life. Our money is our life. Our relationship is our life. Our looks is our life. And what does Jesus say? No. You got it completely wrong. No. No, no, no. Which leads me to my next major point. That life is found where? The next point is that life is found in God and in God alone. See, here's the problem with greed. Here's the problem with our consumeristic society. You know, we live in basically a throwaway society. Look at all the things. These are the things that people work their guts out. These are the things that people thought would make their life happy. These are the things that would give them a secure life. But what happens over time, we get bored of those things. Over time, they break down. Over time, better things come. And so what do? We trash it. The consumeristic society has created the throwaway society. Life is built on throwaway things. That's the problem. And that's therefore then, and Jesus highlights this in the parable of the rich fool. We have a story here about this man who is rich, rich beyond understanding. Jesus described this guy as a rich guy. And things are going swimmingly well for this guy, right? So much so that he starts to expand his business venture, as you can see, expands it. Then suddenly what happens? He drops dead. He drops dead. Now, it could be a stroke or a hundred, we don't know. And then comes the day of judgment. But notice how Jesus assesses this guy in verse 16 to 21. And I want you to notice what Jesus says in verse 20. Look at that little phrase in verse 20. You fool. Just stop and think about that. What a contrast Jesus makes. When you look at this guy, he's rich, his business expanding, he's making good life for himself, and Jesus says this guy is an absolute complete idiot. He's a fool. He's stupid, to say the least. And can I say here, for many of you guys who are starting out in this new world of working or even just university, if this is what you want to be like, you're an absolute idiot, to say the least. If your life is consumed with just getting successful in university, at work, building a comfortable lifestyle, relationships, if that's what it's all about, Jesus wants to say, you are as stupid as you can get. You're a complete idiot. You might be a winner in the eyes of the world, but when it really counts, you're an absolute loser. And you know what's worse? I've seen parents here who are all obsessed with pushing their kids to get their university degree, their high school HSC top mark and university and career and relationships. And then what? Oh, they do the church thing, but then what does Jesus say? You're wrong. You're setting yourself up for fall. Jesus then says here three big points to underline this particular truth. Three big points. Look at what he says here in the next one. The first point here, the three things he didn't get. He certainly didn't get. What are the three things he didn't get? One, he didn't get that everything he had was a gift from God and not from anything he earned. He didn't get that. Have a look at the parable again. Look at the parable. What does it say there, right? But I want you to notice verse 16. Have a look at verse 16. What does it say in verse 16? The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. Well, you notice Jesus doesn't say anything about whether the man was hardworking, smart, well-resourced, doesn't say anything. He simply says the ground yielded it. And what is the point that Jesus is trying to make here? The point that he's saying here, this man did not get it. What didn't he get? He didn't get it that he didn't get what he got through his hard work. He didn't have these great skills. He didn't have great brains. He didn't have whatever. It all came to him simply because of God's gifting to him. And that's something we need to recognize. Everything we have, whether our opportunities, our money, our possessions, our lives, everything we have is a gift from God. We're all in on the same level field. There's no one, the rich, whether you're rich or poor, it's all from God. It's all from God. And this guy just didn't get it. Well, this leads me to my second point. Not only didn't he get that, what is the second point? Have a look at the second point. He didn't get it. That just as God freely gave it to him, he can freely take it away. He can freely take away. Again, look at that, the passage before me. Look at what it says in verse 20. God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you." That's a scary thought, isn't it? God, this guy had set his plan for the future, then bam, he just loses it. How? By losing his life. And life is like that sometimes, isn't it? Can you remember the, I don't know, were you old enough to remember the global financial crisis? Were you there for that? How old were you, 20 at that time? The global financial crisis in 2000, you remember that, right? The global financial crisis. One moment, people are just putting in money, millions of dollars in their investments, their shares, their super. The next moment, the whole thing's worth nothing. No one saw that coming. But that's life, isn't it? Or what about COVID, right? One moment, we're just planning, and the next moment, the whole planet literally shuts down. And you know the funny thing is, we know that we're not in control of things. We absolutely know we're not in control of things. That's why, you know, we take out insurance. Funny thing. We think we're in control of things, and yet we still take out insurance because we know we're not in control of things. It just shows to you that the things that come to us can be so easily taken away. Many years ago, I was ministering to a guy here. He was doing well in the financial world. He stockbroker, have a side business, making lots of money. He was living, he just wanted to, and he was in touch with some of the big guns. One day I was meeting up with him regularly just to read the Bible and just help him to think about God. Then news comes to me, he tells me he's got cancer. And you know what happened? Now all his money is just focused on trying to find the best doctors in the world, to find doctors who can cure him of his cancer. Well, obviously, it never worked. He died eventually. And that's what life is like. That's the funny thing about that, isn't it? We know that we are not in, we think we're in control, we plan our future, and yet on the other hand, we know we're not in control. This passage tells us that what God so easily gives to you freely, he can quickly take away very easily as well. Which leads me to my third point here. This is third sub-point. And that is, the thing that he did not get was simply this. He didn't get the bigger picture that life is ultimately found in God. Have a look what the passage goes on to say in verses 16 through to 21. But look at verse 21. This is how it will be with everyone, anyone, whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. Notice what I said, this is what's going to be like for everyone who just thinks it's all about this, what they have. They end off losing completely everything. But he says, this is what life for those who are not rich in God, rich towards God. What does it mean to be rich towards God? What does it mean to be rich towards God? Well, Jesus puts it, described this in verses 27 to 31. Have a look at verses 27 to 31. But look at verse 31. Zero in verse 1. Right? Jesus talks about all these great things. God will just provide you all these things. But what does he say? Let's get things first, at least straight. Seek first his kingdom. Seek first his kingdom. First things first. Seek first his kingdom. What does it mean to seek first his kingdom? I think it basically means this. Seek first his kingdom. Seek to be right with God. This man's trying to be right with himself, right with them. No, seek right to get right with God. Seek to love and serve him. Seek to honor him over and above all things. Seek to know him more than anything else. Seek to proclaim his name and not your name. Seek to find your joy in him. Seek first his kingdom. And what is his promise? Well, promise is, he says, all these things I will give to you. All these things I'll give to you if you seek first his kingdom. But when Jesus says, all these things I'll give to you, I think Jesus has much more in mind when you think about it. Because look at what he says in verses 32 to 34. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to all. And note what he says here. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. And what is Jesus saying here? Jesus is basically saying, I will take care of you. I will take care of all the things that you concern. But Jesus is saying, I want to give you so much more than that. I actually want to give you more than that. I want to give you treasures that are beyond your imagination. I want to make you filthy rich, but not in the things that you think, but beyond anything you can comprehend. I want to give you delights that the world can look for, but will never ever find. I will give you the joy that the world can never ever, not all the money in the world could ever buy. I want to give you that sort of joy. I want to give you a rich, rich life. In fact, Jesus, I want to give you heaven. That's what I want to give you. I want to give you heaven. Look how Jesus described this in verse 32. For your Father is pleased to give you what? The kingdom. Now, stop and think about that for a moment. It's crazy, isn't it? We are working our butt out to buy a house in the salubrious North Shore. And you know what happens after so many years? We go sell and then end up in a nursing home with our brains just gone, right? That's what happens. Jesus says, I want to give you something bigger than that. I want to give you heaven. You want to aim for millions? I tell you what, that's nothing. That's peanuts. That's spare cash. I want to give you heaven. That's what I want to give you. Do you know what the consumeristic mind, how consumerism works, as I said earlier? It works on the fact that we build our life on things that will wear our way. And they have to wear away. They have to be unsatisfying. Otherwise, the consumeristic society will not work. They have to make things that in the end will go out of date. They have to make things that in the end will break down. They have to do that. Of course, you will need to keep buying more and more and more and more and more. But Jesus says here, you get right with God and I'll give you life. In fact, this is what Jesus says in John chapter 10, verse 10. Look at these words. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Note that phrase, to the full. Now pause and think about this, how this addresses the question, the problem of greed and idolatry. You see, we're greedy for money. But Jesus says, I give you riches in heaven, that you don't need to be worrying about money. That's not to say you don't earn money, but you don't need to die for it. You don't need to pine after it. You don't need to be greedy for it. You don't need to be greedy for popularity. I use the word greedy. You don't need to be greedy for acknowledgements and thank yous. Why? Because your name is written in heaven. Because the Father acknowledges you. Because the Father has put your name up there and takes note of all that you do, even though no one sees it. And he will reward you for all the things that you do. Even if you never receive a thank you in this world, he will always say thank you and reward you for it. You see, we don't need to be greedy for love. Love is a good thing. But we don't need to be greedy for it. You know why? Because the Father said, I have set my love on you forever and ever and ever. And my love for you is unconditional. And my love for you reaches as far as the universe itself, which means that you don't need to be greedy for the love of this world. You don't need to be greedy for food. Food's right. We eat food. We enjoy food. Food's good. But when it becomes an obsession, when you start to kill for it, and Jesus says, you know what? I'm going to give you food that will satisfy your belly forever. I'll give you a drink that will quench your thirst forever. You don't need to be greedy for anything, because God says, I'm going to give you everything and so much more. You see, that brings me to my last point, doesn't it? Because life is found in God and in God alone. Life is found in God and God alone. Next slide, Jet. Well, where does that lead us to? There is that famous passage. Same by that famous missionary, young guy who died, I think, early 30s. Jim Elliot, who died as a missionary in South America. When he landed, he was speared to death the moment he stepped off the helicopter. And this is what he wrote in his journal, that famous saying, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. That's a famous saying. I've used it many times, and other preachers have used it, but it's such a great saying, isn't it? He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. It's so opposite, isn't it? Because in the world, we say he is no fool who gains what he can lose to lose what he cannot. Well, I don't know what it is. I think I got lost there. But you know what I'm saying, all right? So let me wrap it up with it. What's Jesus trying to say to us, that last phrase? Seek first his kingdom. That's what he wants us to do. Seek first his kingdom. Because when you seek first his kingdom, you will find an abundance of wealth beyond imagination that the world can never, ever come close to offering. When you seek first his kingdom, you will find a life that is deep, that is rich, that is satisfying, and that no one can ever take from you. Seek first his kingdom. Well, let me pray. Father in heaven, we want to acknowledge that we often are greedy. The good things which you have given to us, we have turned into idols. They have become subtle, quiet, normal, so-called seemingly respectable forms of greed, but they nevertheless are greed. Will you help us to avoid every kind of greed under the sun and help us to seek first your kingdom? Because to know you is to experience life to the full. In Jesus' name, amen.